Good afternoon. My name is Julianne, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Pediatric Cardiac Surgery Steering Committee conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Ashley Wilbon. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. I wanted to thank everyone for joining us today, and hopefully for the last time reviewing these measures and getting them on to recommendation and on to CSAC to be endorsed. So before we get started, can I just do a quick roll call of the steering committee members? And then we'll kind of move on to a review of the agenda and a little bit of background on the project. Is Nancy there? Nancy Ganahem? I know Daryl Gray is not here. Dr. Hinkle, Alan Hinkle? Shanae Barnett?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, hi, Shanae.
How are you doing?
Sylvia Lopez?
Here.
Hi, Sylvia.
Hi.
Constantine Mavroudis.
I'm here.
Hi, Dr. Mavroudis.
Hi.
Dr. Meyer.
Yep.
He's there. Lisa Nugent. Patricia Galvin. I think she's out of town. Okay. Before we get started with the project activities, I just want to review the agenda. So this afternoon, we've got from about 3 to 5 p.m., so review the measures again. The co-chairs, Dr. Howard Jeffries and Lisa Kaur on the call to facilitate for you guys this afternoon. And after the disclosure of interest and the project activities, we'll get into reviewing the measures, and then we'll have an opportunity for the public to comment, and then discuss the next steps and so forth. Also, just to jump back, we want to give the measure developers an opportunity to give an overview of some of the updates that they made to the measures before the committee gets into discussion. So I will prompt the co-chairs, or before I hand it over to the co-chairs, to give the measure developers an opportunity to do that. Before we get started, I want to bring Ann Hammersmith on the call. She's our general counsel to lead the disclosure of interest, and she will describe exactly what she's looking for in that process from you guys.
Hi, everyone. This is Ann Hammersmith. I'm NQS general counsel. Today, we're going to ask you to do an oral disclosure of interest. Ashley sent out revised forms to you several weeks ago, which you all very kindly filled out. What we'd like you to do is to simply disclose anything that you feel your fellow committee members should know about your background that you believe is relevant to this review. We're not looking for you to summarize your CV, and I also want to emphasize that the fact that you disclose something does not mean that you have a conflict of interest, real or apparent. This is in the spirit of openness and transparency. So I think the easiest way would be for Ashley to call your name, and if you could say what your current position is and if you wish to disclose anything.
We'll start with Lisa Kaur.
My current position is I am a nurse practitioner in the cardiac ICU at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. I'm also a doctoral student at the University of Pennsylvania, and I have nothing to disclose.
Thank you.
Dr. Howard Jeffries?
I am a cardiac intensivist at Seattle Children's Hospital and the medical director of continuous performance improvement here. I disclose that I do some consulting for NACRI on the ICU database.
Thank you, Dr. Jeffries.
Shanae Barnett-Jones?
Hi, I am Shanae Barnett-Jones, Chair of the Patient and Family Advisory Council at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., and parent of a child who is 4 years post-cardiac transplant.
Thank you very much.
Nothing else to disclose.
Thank you.
Dr. Sylvia Lopez?
Yes, I'm a physician medical consultant with the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority. That's a state Medicaid agency, and I have nothing to disclose.
Thank you, Dr. Lopez.
Dr. Constantine Mavroudis?
Hi, I'm Constantine Mavroudis. I'm a congenital heart surgeon at the Cleveland Clinic, and I have nothing to disclose.
Thank you, Dr. Mavroudis.
Dr. John Meyer?
I'm a pediatric cardiac surgeon at the Children's Hospital in Boston. I don't think I have anything to disclose other than that I'm a past president of the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, who is one of the major developers.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer.
Okay, I think that's everyone on the call. Thank you, everyone, for doing that.
Does anyone have any questions, or is there anything that you would like to ask each other as a result of the disclosure? Okay, thank you all very much.
Okay, thank you, Anne. So I just want to give a really quick project overview before we jump into the measures and recap project activities up to this point. Everyone received, all the steering committee members received a memo kind of with the background and how we got to where we are now. And I just kind of wanted to recap a little bit of that and emphasize or kind of reiterate the purpose of today's call. So we had the in-person meeting in October of last year, and we reviewed some measures. Subsequent to that, NQF had some internal changes to the time-limited endorsement policy, during which some measures had come through on this project that somewhat conflicted with the change in the policy, which prompted some internal review. At that point, we went back to some of the measure developers to provide some additional evidence and materials in support of their measures. And in so doing, we wanted to give the steering committee an opportunity to re-review the measures given the additional information that was provided by the measure developers to strengthen their submission. So our purpose of the call today is to give everyone an opportunity to, discuss the measures that have been updated. Some of the measures that were initially reviewed in October have been withdrawn, so we are down to a smaller subset of 13 measures that will be the focus of this call. And hopefully anyone who has questions or any further discussion on any of the measures that would be discussed on this call. We will provide an opportunity for everyone. We won't be voting to recommend the measures on this call. We'll be providing a link to do that online following the call. So those of you, while it's fresh in your mind, if you want to go online directly after the call to vote and recommend the measures based on the discussion here on today's call, you can do that. For those that are not on the call today, we'll be asking them to listen to the recording of the call, review the meeting summary and the materials that we submit to them before they vote. In terms of the recommendations that and discussion that was held, that was done in October, we're going to ask that you due to some of the changes with the policy and given the additional information that was provided for many of the measures that were that are under review today, the recommendations that you made in October will be superseded by what happens today. So the measures are, some of the measures are quite different from what you reviewed given the additional information. So we just wanted to make sure everyone understands that the recommendations made today, there was a measure that was recommended in October, but now today the discussion is leaning towards not recommending it or vice versa, that the recommendations that you guys make today and the votes that you put forward after today's call will be the ones that stand. So that being said, does anyone have any questions before I hand it over to the co-chairs? Okay, great. I did want to give, before we get started, just as a quick overview to kind of get your minds warmed up, I did want to let you know that on the call with me today is Karen Pace. She's our methodologist here at NQF. If you have any specific questions about evaluation criteria or specific process, she's on the call to support me and to support you guys in your discussion today. And also wanted to give the measure developers on the call an opportunity of 1 or 2 minutes just to kind of give the committee an idea of the changes that were made globally to their measures, so that the committee has an idea of, you know, what was changed or what might be different about what they're reviewing today. So, operator, I'm not sure if those measure developers that I'm speaking of are presenters. So if they're on the participants line, they'll need to be prompted on how to speak.
All lines are open at this time.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Why don't we start with STS? Is anyone from STS on the call that would like to speak for a couple minutes about the changes to the measures that were made?
This is Jeff Jacobs. Thank you for the opportunity to present the updates of our measures. Essentially, what we did was after we left the meeting that we all had in Washington, D.C., received notification from NQF that despite the fact that all 20 of our measures were recommended for endorsement by the steering committee with minor modifications, that NQF required a new level of reliability and validity testing. And STS had several meetings with our biostatisticians at Duke University to go over the requirements for reliability and validity testing, which were not in place at the time we submitted the measures, but were in place after the steering committee for sure. So based on those reliability and validity requirements, we withdrew several measures and modified some. We withdrew all of our morbidity measures, the measures related to items like stroke, renal failure, and heart block after surgery, because although we feel that they're very important, we withdrew those because we had not done the type of reliability and validity testing required, and we realized that we would not be able to get that done in time for this process. That left us with our only outcome measure being a mortality measure. And at the request of NQF, we selected one of the three complexity stratification tools for our outcome measure, with the understanding that it would be better to have only one than to have the participant choose from all three. We went back and we reviewed RACS, Aristotle, and the STS EACTS scores, and based on consultation with our biostatisticians and some analyses that we've submitted to NQF, we recommended that we stratify our one outcome measure of mortality by the STS EACTS score. There's four primary reasons for this decision. One, the STS EACTS score is based on clinical data, not administrative data. There's ample data to support that rationale. Two, the scoring system is developed based on objective data from a data set and not on expert opinion alone, or not with a portion of expert opinion. Three, it's based on data from a current reference sample. The other two methodologies, RACS and Aristotle, are from reference samples in the 1990s and early 2000s, and this is from a reference sample within the last few years. And finally, when we did a direct head-to-head comparison, we found better C statistics for prediction of mortality with the STS EACTS score in a validation sample which was used to provide the reliability and validity testing. So therefore, our major modification is that our only outcome measure is an outcome measure of mortality based on STS EACTS score.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Jacobs. Is someone from Children's Hospital Boston on the line?
Yes, we're here. This is Kathy Jenkins, and I'm here with Nina Rauscher and Kim Gavreau.
Okay, great. Can you guys just give us an overview of some of the changes that you made to the measure?
Sure. I think, as the committee may recall, the measure that we put forward was a standardized mortality ratio for in-hospital mortality after congenital heart surgery. The measure consists of risk categories for mortality in addition to additional clinical risk factors. And the methodology that we put forward in our original submission was for both an ICD-9 coded administrative application of our methodology, as well as an application of the methodology from other data sources, including chart extraction. We did not make any changes whatsoever to our measure. It's the exact same measure that we submitted the first go-round. But in response to the additional reliability and validity questions, we did enhance our application. We added in reliability testing, comparing the methodology applied in an administrative data set to a chart review data set, as well as what the actual SMRs look like when it's applied in those two types of data sets, as well as what institutional rankings look like when the SMR is calculated in a population-based administrative data set as opposed to the FIS data set. The data sets used for that were the KID and the FIS. We also expanded the validity testing. We had shown the C statistics in our initial application. We also clarified the ability of our measure to detect meaningful changes over time, as well as to show how the mortality rates within categories work in the KID database, the FIS database, the EACTS database, STS database, and the Pediatric Cardiac Care Consortium database, as well as the additional information, discriminatory information, when the additional risk factors were then added to those mortality rates. We then also provided the original Hosmer-Lemeshaux plots from to show the calibration of the models in the original validation sets, as well as in the KID 2003, KID 2006, and the FIS databases from 2002 through 2006. We also showed what the coefficients for the risk adjustment models are in those data sets, including how the model would be applied in the KID 2006 data set or the FIS 2002-2006 data set. So that's a much more updated application of the model than the original validation data set. We also showed what the roll-up mortality rates were in each of the five data sets that I mentioned previously, and gave specific documentation of how you would use the methodology in the ICD-9 coded data sets as well as in the PCCC data sets, getting more towards what I think NQF is looking for, which is really a roadmap of exactly how an institution would do this. And that's what we've given in response to the inquiries that we've made, that we've been given.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Jenkins. Ashley, this is Karen Pace. Could I make one comment?
Sure.
Right. I just wanted to clarify for everyone. I know we discussed this on your last call some time ago, but NQF's evaluation criteria did not change. What changed was our policy regarding time-limited endorsed measures and the requirements for us considering untested measures. And the big issue was, as you can tell, we still have quite a few time untested measures in this particular set for your consideration. But the big question was about outcome measures that were not risk adjusted. And so in our discussions with STS, the question was, because our criteria allow for no risk adjustment if there's a sound rationale or analyses that support those outcomes do not need to be risk adjusted. And we have not endorsed untested outcome measures that require risk adjustment. So I just wanted to clarify, it's not that our criteria changed, but it's our policy regarding time-limited endorsed measures for those that have been untested. And the big issue with these measures was really not about the process or structure measures, but about outcome measures that were not risk adjusted. So I'll stop there and let you go on.
Hi. Can you clarify, this is John Meyer, could you clarify one or two things for me about this? because I'm sorry, I'm getting a little lost in the terminology.
Okay.
When you say tested, what are the criteria for tested?
Well, testing primarily relates to the criterion for scientific acceptability of measure properties, and that's where we have reliability, validity, risk adjustment. Those are the big ones, but there's some others under that category. But it's primarily reliability and validity testing of the data or the measure score. And then certainly for outcome measures, that includes risk adjustment.
So my interpretation would be that both of the proposed mortality outcome measures fit those criteria.
Yes, yes, they are, and that's why they're still on this list. The ones that came off the list were the morbidity outcome measures that did not have risk adjustment.
So they have to be both risk adjusted and previously tested, is that correct, basically?
Right. Well, risk adjustment is part of the testing for an outcome measure, the development and testing of a risk model.
Okay. All right. So that until there are publications that actually investigate both risk adjustment and the overall validity of those morbidity measures, they are not acceptable.
Well, it doesn't have to be publications.
Okay.
But the analyses need to be done and presented.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, Karen. If I could direct everyone's attention to the webinar screen, what we've done is we sent out the evaluation criteria via an online Survey Monkey to each of the steering committee members to complete. The responses that we received, we compiled in a spreadsheet that we will be using as a guide for today's call. So if you look up on the screen, in the far left column, we've got the measure number. Right now, I'm filtering by all responses received for PCS-001, which is the participation in a national database for pediatric congenital heart surgery. And then the responses to each of the sub-criteria and overall criteria for each of the four evaluation criteria of importance, scientific acceptability, usability, and feasibility. So if you look up here at the very top in red where it says yes or high, moderate, no or low, or abstain, those are the overall tallies or counts of how many people responded with that particular response for the that particular criteria. So what we'll do, and also if for the comments or the rationale columns, we can see what those comments are. If I click on the actual cell, the comments will show above in the text box above in the Excel spreadsheet. So hopefully everyone can see that and follow along. As we review the measures, I'll kind of be, you know, clicking around to kind of give more information based on the discussion and so forth. So if it's okay with the co-chairs, unless you guys would like to start somewhere else, I have up measure one now. I can start wherever you guys want me to start. If you want to start from the beginning, that's okay too.
That's fine.
Okay.
We can start with one.
Okay. So at that point, I'm going to hand it over to the co-chairs, and we'll start with PCS-001-09, which again was the participation in a national database.
Okay, this is Lisa. I'm just going to review the comments. I think you can see the results here, and as we can go in more depth in terms of the actual responses as we go. But let me just get to the. So in terms of importance, those who reviewed it all were in agreement that it's an important measure. In terms of scientific acceptability, the ratings widely varied, and I think we need to have some discussion about that based upon the criteria that we reviewed in order to rate this. I don't know if anyone wants to comment on how this fit with participation in database, but I know when I did the survey, it was difficult for me to rate this based on the criteria that we were given in terms of the survey itself. Does anybody else have any comments about this?
If you don't, this is Gus Maravutis. If you don't have a database, then it's very difficult to measure things. And to that end, a little bit more, that if the database is verified, then that makes it a more important tool. Alternatively, one can use Epic or some other database. But since most of the congenital heart surgery programs in the country have a organized database, then it makes sense to use it. That's my comment.
Lisa, this is John Meyer again.
Yep.
You know, it strikes me that, at least in terms of the reliability, are you talking about the reliability of the database, or are you talking about what? I'm not quite sure I understood exactly what your concerns were.
Well, that's the good question, because I think in terms of, at least from my standpoint, my personal experience in trying to read the statement and how you were trying to, it was hard to interpret whether it meant the reliability of the database versus the intention of using the database to improve, you know, the overall intention is to improve
right.
outcomes in this population.
This is Karen Pace. Let me just explain a little bit about what we're looking for regarding reliability and validity testing, and then we might be able to move forward. Basically, and actually this is a subject of some current study with a special task force, right now our criteria allow for reliability and validity testing at either the data item level, which would be at the database level, or for the computed measure score. So the fact that I believe with the structure and process measures from STS, they did not submit any reliability or validity data, though we understand that they actually do validate the database, which they could use for that kind of information, but they felt they didn't have time to really pull that all together. So am I correct, Ashley, that we don't have on the second round the reliability and validity data exactly? Right.
On how the database is verified?
Right.
I don't believe so. And I will
I can check that, but basically if we don't have reliability and validity data or reliability and validity testing, then it really would be impossible for this to have a high rating because it's just not done yet. So but we will. It's Dr. Jacob, do you want to just respond to that real quick? I think that was the case for all of the structure and process measures, correct?
Dr. Jenkins actually had to run out.
No, Jacobs.
I'm sorry.
Well, first of all, regarding the verification of the completeness and accuracy of the data in the STS database, we provided documentation of that in every metric that we submitted, and we referenced peer-reviewed publications about our data audit process, the results mm-hmm. of that data audit process, and the actual references of where we published that information in the medical literature. So there is ample published data about how the STS database is audited for completeness and accuracy. As far as providing specific reliability and validity testing for the remaining structure and process measures, it was our understanding that we were supposed to send to NQF the detailed reliability and validity testing for the outcome measures. And that's where we focused all our efforts. I, to be honest, was completely unaware that we were also supposed to provide reliability and validity testing for the structure and process measures that that we submitted.
Right. So
if
let me
that
just.
That was a requirement. We may just have to start over.
No, well, no. That was some. It needed to be done for the outcome measures to move forward,
right.
And that's why the structure and process measures are being considered for time limited endorsement. Yeah, Dr. Jacobs, this is Ashley. I had some email communications with Jane Hahn about that and asked her, I'm not sure if she's on the phone, but we had had some email communications about whether additional information would be submitted for that, and she told me that there would not be. So,
I mean, I'm not, to be honest, I mean, it's beyond me how you could do reliability and validity testing to prove that it's a good idea to have a database.
No, it's not about the good idea about having a database. It's about, well, we can get into the specifics, but it's about the actual data that are used to say yes or no.
All right. This is Dr. Marshall Jacobs. If I might add, on page 9 of the submission for the single outcome measure that we submitted, there is under 2B a heading accuracy and completeness of the STS congenital heart surgery
yes,
database.
Yes, we're not questioning about the outcome measure. We're talking about the structure and process
right.
measures.
Let me
finish my point, please, okay. Because what you asked about was validity testing of the database and the accuracy of the process. And what I was about to say is that there in the submission is a reference of published literature on exactly that subject under the heading, this process of verification of data has demonstrated that the STS congenital heart surgery database is complete and accurate as documented in the report overview as well as the following peer-reviewed publication. Now, I would have thought that citing peer-reviewed publications would have served the same purpose as cutting and pasting the content of those publications, since the information is available to the committee to check those publications and see if they're satisfied that validity is fulfilled.
But I think the point Marshall's making is very important. We've sent to NQF substantial documentation about the audit process that the STS database undergoes, about audit for completeness, the audit for accuracy, and the reliability and validity of the overall database. And that information has been included in the measure application submission forms for several of the measures with the references in the peer-reviewed literature that document these facts.
Okay, thank you.
So this is Howard Jeffries. I think it's clear that from the submissions that the STS database, you know, is reliable and valid as Dr. Jacobs has stated. From my understanding of what we're trying to do here is trying to understand about if the measure is useful for public reporting. And as part of that, if I look through some of the comments, there was one person who voted not to recommend the measure. And the rationale behind that was that the specification of STS codes requires participation in the registry for use of this measure as currently described. And I think we should probably have some discussion around that topic and that the way reading through it, there's a lot of comments about STS procedures and codes. Again, and I'm not sure that they then are in concert with the description of the measure, which is participation in a national database. If there is a non-STS database that uses valid cardiac surgical codes, one would then should be able to participate and not be limited to the STS codes. So I just
STS agrees with that completely.
Okay. So I think that's, you know, I think that would serve that. At least that concept would serve to probably to, I can't speak for Daryl, but maybe that would make him more comfortable.
I'm sorry, I'm getting lost here. There was not a specification in this measure that it be the STS database, was it?
No, there's not a specification, but there's specification on STS procedure codes. I mean, I wouldn't think that a non-STS database would need to use STS procedure codes to be valid.
This is one of the problems with speaking now from a surgeon's perspective, that I have a problem with other databases, any other databases, particularly those based on ICD-9, because if you look at the back end of this, whatever it is, 180 pages that we're talking about here.
John, but speak into the microphone a little bit better.
Okay, sorry. Is that better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay. I think there are limitations with other data sets as well, particularly those based on ICD-9 procedure code. And I guess I would point out on page 830, for instance, there's the definition of a ROS procedure. I'm sorry, that's the wrong one. There are two sets. One is the I'll find it. But suffice it to say that the the specification of a procedure is, and definition of a procedure is something that is really sort of central to this whole process. And I'm just concerned that the lack of specificity actually causes, may equally cause some problems. So this is not an attempt to convince everybody in the world that they're supposed to use the STS database. But I think that what has to be done is if these are, so let's just try page 1813. There's something described as a ROS procedure, which I think any of the surgeons and probably most of the other participants wouldn't understand that. So in this definition, under ICD-9 definition, it requires that both an aortic valve replacement and a pulmonary valve replacement procedure be coded. And I think all of us could easily think of examples where we did that and we didn't do a ROS procedure. So that's a counterexample, right? I mean, I've certainly done this. I've replaced pulmonary valves and aortic valves in an old tetralogy patient who didn't have a ROS procedure. And yet, so I'm concerned about how that one's going to get coded in the ICD-9 database. So, or in ICD-9-based database. So I guess I think what's happening here is that, for people who want to be able to use other databases, which we clearly think are not as precise as the STS database is, then why aren't we questioning the ICD-9-based procedural database?
This is Gus Mavroudis. I couldn't have put it any better. I was preparing something in the same vein, which probably would have taken a longer time to deliver, but I agree 100% with that assessment.
Well, anyway, I think the objection to using the STS database is it's hard for me to understand that one.
I guess in some ways maybe you're misconstruing what I'm saying.
Okay. Try it again, then.
And it's not as an objection to using the STS database. It's that should we be prescriptive in the measure to say that one must use the STS database?
Yeah.
And not to say that these codes are not valid. And not to say that, and I'm not saying ICD-9 is more valid. I'm saying these are valid. But if there is another database out there that uses valid codes, that should be acceptable as well.
The measure as we put it forward did not say it had to be the STS database. It said it had to be a multi-institution outcomes database for pediatric congenital heart disease.
Right, but then I'm trying to understand the use of all the STS procedure codes within the measure.
Because we were asked to provide a list of the procedures that this would be applicable to. Originally, we sent it in with CPT codes. Then we were asked to do it with ICD-9 codes. We sent it in with CPT and ICD-9 codes. Then we were asked to add to that the STS codes. Then we were told that all they need is the STS codes and to take out the CPT and ICD-9 codes.
Yeah, so our position.
We were just responding.
Our position did not involve voluntarily listing any codes of any type with any implications. But as we reviewed at the last steering committee meeting, we had been instructed to submit a list of ICD-9 and CPT codes. We were then asked why they were there. And in a subsequent phone conversation with people from NQF, we were asked to replace them with STS codes. We're not inferring by listing those codes that the use of those codes is in any way necessary or inherent in compliance with the measure. The measure is simply participation in a national registry database.
Yeah, no, that does, I assume Daryl will review the tape of this to help him get some clarity around that.
Yeah, this is Sean. I just want a clarification. Do the other databases use the STS procedure codes or not?
What other databases?
Is there another database? Just from this
the
conversation.
The only other databases are administrative claims databases. Oh,
okay, that's what I needed. Thank you.
And they're all based on ICD-9 procedure codes.
So
and diagnosis codes.
So there's really no codes needed for this particular measure. It's just yes or no participation.
Yes.
That's kind of where I was driving to. Thank you.
And this is Ashley. Just as clarification, during the measure review kind of loop with SCS, we were asking for codes for measures where you were saying that the registry was a possible data source. We did ask for SCS codes because you need those codes in order to correspond with the database, with the registry for the database. So, for instance, where you were identifying a population of patients, maybe for the antibiotic measure or something, those were the measures where we were really concerned about the codes matching the registry database. So, and where we were asking not for CPT or ICD-10, but for STS codes. So just to clarify that.
And that's, this is Jeff Jacobs. That's why STS provided the STS codes to meet the to provide a response to that specific request.
Right.
But I think in addition to providing that information, we provided a very detailed discussion with multiple peer-reviewed publications documenting our tremendous concerns about the accuracy of administrative codes to assess outcomes of pediatric and congenital heart surgery. The example that John Meyer on the steering committee just brought up is a classic example, but there's papers that have been published by the Center for Disease Control of the United States government that have looked at this closely and have concluded that any form of outcomes analysis based on administrative data sets and ICD-9 codes is severely flawed. And that's not a paper written by the STS, that's by the CDC. And we provided a whole pile of those references to explain our rationale for saying that outcomes analysis should be done with the clinical data set, clinical nomenclature.
Okay, and we'll get to the outcomes in the further measures. So, okay.
Okay, so is there more discussion on this first measure? Okay.
Okay, so we should just move on. The next measure is...
What happened to that
sorry.
Measure? I'm sorry, this is Gus Miller. What happened to that measure? Did we just vote on it? Are we voting on this on the first measure?
We're not voting.
All right, thank you. I thought that we were going to vote. I'm sorry.
I think the voting will be done after, so that way even the folks who are unable to make the conference call will be able to vote. Yes, sir.
So the next measure is PCS-00209, which is multidisciplinary pre-op conference. There was a lot of variation in the ratings for all four criteria with regards to this measure, and I will open this up for discussion. I think some of this we just had might be clarified by the discussion of the prior measure with regards to scientific acceptability.
Is the webinar looking at that now?
We're not.
I'm still looking at Ross procedures.
Yeah, it hasn't moved.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
You.
One second. I'm sorry. I had to move to another screen for a second.
This is Gus Maravutis. I wonder if there was any confusion the way this was stated, that another name for this is a preoperative cath conference or preoperative cardiology-cardiac surgery conference. I think that's all clear, isn't it?
Planning conference or something like that?
Well, I mean, we would call it...
I know what we would call it.
I don't know. I think I just wanted to make sure that the various synonyms were verbalized, so we all know that what this is.
That's a good point. It might have been misinterpreted or interpreted by different people. Do you have it up? Is there any other comments?
I didn't see anyone think that this is not a good conference. Is that correct?
That I used yesterday.
Says no or low. Was that one person who said?
Well, there's the importance for 1C was there were some people that put no.
Now, I would love to hear the rationale for someone who didn't think that this conference was important. I would love to hear that. And if no one is coming forth, the only thing I can conclude is that must have been a mistake.
Or somebody who's not on the call.
Correct.
Or someone who's not on the call. Or someone who's never participated in this conference.
The comment, I think, was about what evidence was provided that shows that relates to better outcomes. But I think that's what the comment was.
Well, that means that the rest of us should try to refute that, or what should we do about that now?
I think we should have a dialogue about it if there's evidence if it's been brought up by one of the reviewers.
I have never seen any paper written that says that a multidisciplinary conference helps outcomes. I have never seen that. It's almost like saying that I've never seen a study showing that a parachute is good if you fall out of a plane, I think. And I don't mean to be cute about it, but I can't imagine that a multidisciplinary conference would not be good for a program.
How would you do a study and write that paper? You'd randomize between a group of patients having surgery with a conference and a group of patients having a surgery without a conference and see if it has a better outcome?
Right, and so then you'd have to say you have to do that study, if that's what you want to do. Alternatively, one can be intuitive and say, well, if we talk about a patient, wouldn't that be better than not talking about a patient? I mean, I hope I'm not being too simplistic here, but I'm baffled at someone who might say that such a conference is not a good thing.
Right. And just to clarify, this measure is a structural measure rather than a patient by patient. So it's just whether the program
exactly
has
it's either a yes or no, correct?
Yes, I believe that's how the measure is specified.
Sure.
Correct.
Yes.
So the only reason why this might not be a good measure is that it might not be discriminating, because there is no place in the country that I know of that does not have a multidisciplinary conference. One could argue that. One cannot argue whether it's a good thing or not.
Any other comments? Okay. We'll move to the next one. It's PCS-00309, multidisciplinary rounds. In terms of importance, mostly we're in agreement that this is important. In terms of scientific acceptability, the ratings were widely varied. I would assume it would be similar to the first measure we discussed. In terms of feasibility and usability, mostly rated it high, and it was recommended by everyone except for one person.
The only problem with this is defining what is meant by multiple members of the healthcare team. I assume that that would be, if we were going to use this as a measure, then there would be a subcategory on which members of the team have to be on rounds. I guess that's correct. For instance, do you include nutrition? Do you include the nurse practitioners? Do you include anesthesia, et cetera?
This is Dr. Marshall Jacobs. I'm not a steering committee member. I'm a measure proposer. May I ask for a clarification? Since we have seen so much variability in the scores in this section on scientific accuracy, my question harkens back to that discussion originally about reliability and validity and whether it had to do with outcome measures or all measures. What instructions go with the request to score a structure measure by scientific accuracy? In other words, what are you seeking by categorizing scientific accuracy?
This is Karen Pace. Our criteria are the same for all measures, reliability and validity. Reliability could be at the data item level, and certainly for structural measures where it's just a yes or no, it would be about the data item, and the validity. So there would be ways to verify that the data that's used to indicate whether this measure was met is indeed accurate. That's what we would be looking for, reliability and validity for structure and process measures. At the measure score level, for example, on a process measure, it also could be looking at the precision of the measure score, how much of that is due to noise or error versus signal and true variation across provider scores. So the criteria for reliability and validity are in our criteria regardless of the type of measure.
So for the previous measure that was discussed, the preoperative conference, reliability and validity go to the question of whether someone actually shows the patient's echocardiogram at the conference or whether it's helpful for the surgeon to have seen the patient's echocardiogram before operating. In other words, I'm still lost as to this data validity part.
Okay, well, I think we need to actually move on with this call and let the committee discuss what they want to discuss about the measures, and we'll be glad to spend more time with you to give you more details about the criteria. But the
before we move on, can I just interject something? I thought that when we met in October that there was some consideration as to whom from the healthcare environment should participate in that call. I know that they gave, we gave, I think there were two or three different people who they said, we said should always be participating in that meeting, and then others as necessary, I think is how it was worded. In addition to that, I thought we had made a recommendation that that measure be revised to include your caregiver or family in that, since we know that that is a real high priority and that does not happen at all of the pediatric institutions.
You did, and we have to open up the actual measure submission form to see how that was dealt with, but you're absolutely right.
And that way,
and that was done. In the, if you look at the measure submission form,
exactly. If we open up the measure submission form, the answers to that are we did exactly what you recommended. We thought it was very important, especially the part about the family members, and the measure was revised exactly as was recommended. And it's not in a short name, but it's in the actual measure description.
Okay, and the description, and I'm opening it up as we talk, the description as to whom from the healthcare environment should be included, at least a short list, if you will.
Can we go to that page on the webinar or no?
Yeah, Sarah, could you, which measure number is that again?
Three.
3. So, Sarah, could you open that up on the...
Sure.
No, that's open. Sarah, it's open on my desktop already. You don't need to go in there. Yep, there you go. So go to the numerator and specification section. There. There we go.
So the title of the measure was where it's multiple members of the healthcare team, but the brief description has exactly what was just mentioned, with a listing of the members who are included but not limited to, and we added the sentence, involvement of the family is encouraged. And that text was text that was wordsmithed at the steering committee meeting in Washington, D.C. by the group.
Correct. Thank you.
Jeff, it's Howard Jeffries. What is there any frequency specified here, whether this is daily or weekly or monthly?
I thought we had talked about that when we had...
Right. I think we had.
If you go to number 4, which says time window, next to time window it says conducted
daily
on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Tracked
okay,
at
that's
1 year.
Daily round.
It's conducted on a daily basis and tracked at 1 year and 4 year time intervals.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Chair. You bet.
Any other further discussion on 03? Okay, if not, we'll move on to the 004, which is regularly scheduled cardiac care conferences. With regards to the review, in terms of the summary, with regards to importance, everyone was in agreement that this is an important measure. Scientific acceptability, most were in agreement, rated it moderately high in terms of usability and high, I'll just leave it at that. In terms of feasibility, there was some wide variability, however, and all recommended except for one of the reviewers. Now,
so to put this in a little bit more perspective, I think a synonym for this is a morbidity and mortality conference. Or a complications conference in that vein, and this measure is required by a number of institutions. So it's I think that's what that is, and I think that's what it should be. That should be the synonym anyway.
Did we? I can't remember if we recommended that as a change in the name. I know we had some discussion about this at the table when we were in D.C.
I can't remember, but I agree with that.
The recommendations that came out of it were actually to change it to the name that it's at now.
Correct. Correct. This was put forth by STS basically be the standard M&M conference that we had when we were in residency and that most programs continue to have, mortality and morbidity conference. And the discussion at the steering committee meeting in Washington, D.C. led to the wordsmithing of the metric and using the term quality assurance and quality improvement cardiac care conference.
Yeah. Okay.
But if you read the brief description describes a conference which basically is the same as what an M&M conference was, and that it should be held quarterly every 3 months.
At least quarterly.
Right, at least quarterly. And the name is the name that was selected by the steering committee.
I do remember us having a dialogue about that. Any other comments about this measure? Okay, we'll move forward. The next one is 005, availability of TEE. All of the reviewers acknowledged that it was important. In terms of scientific acceptability, most were in agreement. In terms of facility, again, there was most were in agreement, and all recommended this measure. any comments on this measure?
The good thing about this measure is that there are ample manuscripts in the literature that support this. So it's not only that we support it, but the literature supports it.
Any other comments? Okay, we'll move on to the next measure, 006, availability of ECLS. In terms of the reviewers, all thought that this was an important measure. In terms of scientific acceptability, most were in agreement that it was feasibility, most were in agreement, and all of the reviewers recommended this measure. Are there any comments? Okay, we'll move on to the next one. Surgical volume is 007. In terms of the review importance, all the reviewers felt that it was important. Scientific acceptability, most were in agreement. Feasibility, most were in agreement, and all of the reviewers recommended that this was an important measure. Are there any comments?
Let me just be sure I understand. Is this at the institutional level? Is that what we're... sorry, I'm not quite caught up yet here.
I think that that's true, but can we go to the description? I don't know. Jeff?
Oh, we'd have to open up the description.
So the description is a surgical volume for pediatric heart and pediatric congenital heart surgery, with the numerator being the number of pediatric and congenital heart surgery operations. So is your question, John, if it relates to a surgeon or a place?
Correct.
Okay.
And whether or not we shouldn't specify that.
Yeah.
Because I do think that, you know, there are probably, my intuition would be that there are probably effects at both levels.
Yeah.
Namely that, you know, there is an institutional, obviously, effect, and there's also a surgeon level effect. And I think... the FPS position on the adult cardiac database, whatever that's worth, and I think what is already in as an NQF measure is institutional volume. And I think I could be wrong about that, though, so don't take that one as gospel. Not that you would anyway, but considering the source. But the... But I think that this would be something that, you know, we might want to discuss a little bit.
And the only thing that comes to mind about that is what you do when people move places.
Yeah, that's right. And
do you track their outcomes only at that center, or is it something that goes along with someone?
Well, right. Well, there's that issue, and then the other side of the issue is, you know, how, I mean, you know, I just speak from my own personal experience, right? You know, at one point in my career, I was probably doing, you know, 300 or more operations a year. My cumulative experience is probably in excess of 5,000 or more. And yet, you know, what happens if one year I only do 25 cases?
Right.
Or, you know, so I
think that the measure is proposed as an institutional volume measure.
Okay.
Right.
Fine.
Right.
I think that makes sense, to be honest.
Yeah. And it may just need to be specified in the numerator, just
right.
a little more clearly.
Because, Sarah, if you would move down to where it says level of analysis, item 14, the submission says it's level of analysis is group of clinicians, facility.
Okay, great. I see
right.
it. I'm sorry.
Right.
Yep.
And in fact, that's the way all of these measures are developed, based on the principle that the quality of care is not determined by one individual health practitioner, but by the team providing the care, or in other words, cardiac surgery is a team sport.
Right. So as long as that's not going to get buried someplace.
Right. No, I think it's helpful to also make it explicit in your numerator statement. I just wanted to point that out.
Yes. No, you're right. But I didn't, to be honest with you, I didn't look down at the data source or the unit of measurement. But
right.
I wonder if it would be worth putting that into the
sure.
into the numerator statement.
So, and Jeff, is it your sense that this measure is very similar to the previous NQF measure on heart surgery volume, but this has more specificity around the procedures?
You're talking about the adult cardiac measure for cardiac surgical volume?
No, NQF 340, which is pediatric heart surgery volume.
Right, so that was part of an AHRQ initiative,
right.
And Emil Bach and I actually sat on the committee as the only surgical representatives from the domain of cardiac surgery. AHRQ had a committee that had pediatric neurosurgeons, pediatric oncologists, a variety of pediatric subspecialists, and they came up with using volume as a surrogate for outcome. And they wrote a measure based on pediatric cardiac surgery volume from measured volume from administrative data sets and ICD-9 codes. So the difference between this and that is that, number one, this is not volume as a surrogate for outcome. It's volume as a measure to be able to then assess outcome. And also, it's using clinical data with clinical terms rather than administrative data. And it goes back to what I said before about all the flaws of administrative nomenclature, so that when you count up the number of pediatric and congenital cardiac surgery cases from an ICD-9 registry, you're not going to get the number of open hearts you actually did at the hospital.
Okay.
So this is very, very, very different from the currently existing measure.
Any further discussion? Okay, we'll move on to the next one. 008 is stratified surgical volume. In terms of the review summary, all of the reviewers felt this measure was important. In terms of scientific acceptability, most were in agreement. Feasibility, most were in agreement, and all of the reviewers recommended it. Any comments on this measure? None?
So I guess the only question I had is what do you feel the benefits of this measure versus, or having the one we said before versus just having this one?
Well, I think what we said was that it's important for a program to know both the total number of cases that they're doing and the number of cases that they're doing in each complexity level.
But can't you just add up the complexity levels?
Well, yeah, you could also say, okay, well, if you're reporting mortality, then you don't need either one of these because this is the other ones are a component of mortality. So we thought what we did was we looked at the way other subspecialties have put together their metrics, including the adult cardiac surgeons, and we thought listing volume, then listing complexity stratified volume, then listing mortality and mortality stratified by complexity stratification was a logical way to present these metrics. The truth is that you could eliminate both of these volume measures because you have to know the volume to have the denominator for mortality.
Mm-hmm.
But that I don't think that gives a complete picture. And if we follow the precedent of what other subspecialties have done, they first asked to gather volume as a process measure and then to gather outcome as an outcome measure. And I think it makes sense to, yes, you could add them both up, but I think it makes sense to report them separately so that then you have, A, the domain of everything that's in the universe of pediatric and congenital cardiac surgery, and then, B, the complexity stratified outcomes. And you know what? The most important issue is that no complexity stratification tool includes all pediatric and congenital heart surgery. In the STS database, if you use the RACS tool, you get 84% of the operations in the STS database. If you use the Aristotle tool, you get 96% of the operations in the STS database. And if you use the STS EACTS scores, you get 99% of the operations in the STS database.
Howard, I think one of the points
that... you can't add them all up.
I think one of the points that a steering committee member, patient advocate, made at the face-to-face meeting was that in considering where your child has care, you're interested in knowing whether it's a big or small center. You're interested in knowing whether it's a center that takes care of only simple cases or many complex cases. And then you may be specifically interested in what the outcomes are like for a given strata of patients. So that there are really three separate considerations that complete the picture that characterize a center.
And I guess the truth is you can't add them all up because you're not going to capture all of them with just the five strata.
Right. Well, I think that's in my mind, that's the useful piece of...
And depending on which system you use, you get 84%, 96%, or 99%.
Right. Okay.
Any other comments? Okay, we'll move on to number 10, which is timing of antibiotic administration. In terms of the review summary, all of the reviewers thought it was an important measure. Scientific acceptability, most were in agreement. Feasibility, most were in agreement. And all of the reviewers recommended this measure except for one. Any comments?
Not to, what was the reason given for not?
That was me. I feel like 11 and 12 should be thought of together. I mean, I'm fine with the with 10, 11. I'm fine with the measure, but... In my mind, you know, timing is fine, but if you don't give the right dose, then timing is irrelevant. So I look at them both as being a combined, make it stronger than just separate.
I had a similar feeling about that. In fact, I graded the next one down a little bit because the selection of the antibiotic may be different and still and from different institution to other institution and still be appropriate. I think it's reasonable to combine them, but at the same time, if Jeff or Marshall have any comments about this, I'd love to hear it.
These were kept as separate, again, to be consistent with the way that other subspecialties have handled their process measures. And I think we were just trying to remain, I mean, I'm saying the same thing again. We were trying to remain consistent with other NQF-endorsed measures in other domains where they separated out dosage with timing. So that was why we did this the same way.
Again, I feel this is a highly, you know, important measure. And I don't have a strong opinion to vote against it. Again, I just want us to talk about combination. And is that, from the NQF folks here, is that something that you've recommended places to do, to separate out measures or to combine?
No, we haven't recommended they be separated to that extent. So we don't have a policy about that. So, you know, if it's certainly worth, you know, you can bring it up in discussion and see what the steering committee thinks about that.
Well, it's certainly, the next one was certainly challenging for the reviewers because although everyone recommended it in terms of importance and also, except for one person, there was a lot of variability between the scientific acceptability, usability, and feasibility. So I think it was challenging for people to pull it apart from the prior measure, which was the timing of the antibiotic.
So one template that we had used was that the 20 National Quality Forum endorsed consensus standards for adult cardiac surgery. We thought that would be a reasonable thing to use as a template because those were all previously endorsed by NQF, and they have separate one that says selection of antibiotic administration for cardiac surgery patients and two, duration of prophylaxis for cardiac surgery patients. So they had separated out, you know, whether or not you use the right antibiotic, and then they separated that out from whether or not the dose, the duration of administration was appropriate. So based on the way that was handled by the NQF-endorsed adult cardiac measures, we thought that we should model that That's how we came up with that.
This is Ashley. And Karen, you can jump in if I'm incorrect, but we basically have endorsed the measures the way they've been submitted. There's no reason why, you know, it couldn't be combined. It's not like Karen said, there's no policy against combining measures, and it's obviously that it's been done that way in the past, but there's no reason we couldn't change that going forward if that makes more sense from a measurement perspective.
Howard, I think this is Marshall speaking. May I interject something here?
Yeah.
I think your comment about these being interrelated is very, very important. I think that one of the issues in separating them into two measures is the avoidance of creating a composite measure. In other words, if you talk to infectious disease people, you can have a highly effective program if you're compliant in both of these areas. You can have a highly ineffective program if you choose the right antibiotic but have poor timing of administration. And you can have a highly ineffective program if you have good timing of administration but choose the wrong antibiotic or the wrong dose. And in fact, it would be very complicated from a statistical standpoint to create a composite measure that would reflect compliance or success if the two were combined. And I suspect that that's one of the reasons that in previous measure sets like the adult set, they've been considered separately. It's more checkboxes, but it's scientifically more likely to give an accurate picture if you don't have to create a quantitative composite to analyze compliance.
And I believe some of the discussions surrounded if you were doing a QI, to how do you trace it back to where the system broke down? Was it the person who prescribed the antibiotic versus the timing?
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So this is Nancy. I'm sorry. I had to get in a couple times because no one could hear me. But my concern with the second one, the dosage, is that the dose selection is something that is not concrete. It's very weight-based and takes into account organ function. And I'm not quite sure how anyone who'd be entering the data would be able to identify whether the correct dose was given or not. So I think that was the second one of the antibiotic measures that was proposed, is make not just the selection of the antibiotic, but making sure it was the correct dose of antibiotic.
Well, an analogous situation is that it's not. You got to follow me through on this because it's going to be tough for me to explain. But one of the adult cardiac measures is whether or not you use an internal mammary artery, and it's not just really yes or no using it, because there's several good reasons why one might not use it, such as that it's been damaged in a previous operation, or the patient's had chest wall radiation, or he's a diabetic. So there's some good reasons why one might not use it. And the format for gathering compliance or noncompliance with the measure has to take into account the possibility of those good reasons. Similarly, in a measure like this, there's a range of acceptable dosage, and then that range has to be adjusted because of hepatic dysfunction or renal dysfunction. And the format for gathering the data would have to take into account those exceptions.
Yeah, I think the differences there is that you as a surgeon can easily delineate what the exceptions are, but you as a surgeon or a surgical counterpart or extender would not know what the pharmacy's rationale after the fact was for selecting a lower dose or a higher dose than that was recommended. Because then you start taking into account not just what you see as a surgeon, but what the kineticist or the internist or the intensivist or whoever.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And these measures are not supposed to just measure what the surgeon's doing. They're supposed to measure what the healthcare team is doing.
Right. And that's why I think it's challenging to track that here.
Yeah, the healthcare team includes that pharmacokineticist. And if he's adjusting antibiotic doses for renal failure, that should be documented somewhere.
Should, but I'm not quite sure that that's always true, and I'm not quite sure that's always in the notes. And it doesn't end up in my notes when I dictate. The pharmacist tells me they're going to do it, and I tell them, go ahead and do it. So it's one more spot that they might document in it that the person who's entering the data might not look for the data. I don't think it's a feasible measure that can be tracked successfully. Take into account everything that goes into dosage and the wide range of patients' weights that we see in kids.
Are there any other pediatric measures? I mean, this may be a little bit of a theoretical concern here, but this, I think now we're sort of, I'm worried a little bit about what precedent we're setting, because that would apply basically to every pediatric medication. You know, because they all have to be weight adjusted.
And right. But there's, I don't think that, to my knowledge, there isn't a measure that tells you that you are or not given an accurate dosage. I think most of the work is being done on making sure that what's ordered is what is what's given. And those of you at the NQF might know a little bit more about what's been looked at in kids.
This is Karen. I can't tell you offhand that we have a pediatric medication measures that are, get down to the level of, you know, the dosage by weight or by the other, or adjustment by weight or the other factors. So we could certainly check that out and let the steering committee know. Just in terms of the discussion about combining the two, as Ashley said, it's not that NQF has a policy. You're right that those measures for the adult were endorsed that way, and so it's certainly reasonable to model that. The other way that this would be combined, rather than in a more complex composite, is simply that both things have to be met, that it's both the right medication and for the right duration, in order to be considered meeting the particular measure. So there are ways to combine these, and the fact that the discussion was that you need both to be effective, both the right medication and the right timing, you know, that would be another consideration if it were to be combined. But
are there any studies in children that tell you what the right medication and the right duration are?
That
again,
would be for the committee to discuss, right?
Right. I don't think that that's out there either. So, again, I think you are left with whether they're giving an antibiotic at the right time relative to the incision. Because I don't think right now there's no consensus on the right duration and the right antibiotic.
And you're absolutely right, and that's why we these are different from in the adult measures. Where they talk about duration. When we studied this, we realized that we could not have a metric that involved duration, because there's good literature in adults about duration, but that literature doesn't exist in pediatric heart surgery. So that's why we took duration out of the picture and just talked about the timing in relation to surgery and
the dose was
weight appropriate.
Right, so you could combine the initiation and the dose and the right antibiotic. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, no, the reason we didn't, I think in part, it was because we were trying to follow the pathway that the adults did. And the second reason is what Marshall said, that if you combine them, then it's kind of hard to use the results of the measures to figure out what went wrong. Whereas if they're separated, you could figure out where the problem was.
I don't think anybody wants to fall on a sword, though. If there's a very strong feeling
Absolutely.
That they should be considered together,
Absolutely.
We would happily make that accommodation.
Yeah.
I don't think they should be considered together.
We can go either way on it.
Yeah.
I'm persuaded by the argument that if this is going to be a useful tool, then you need both of them.
All right, I won't go over the one separately if that's okay, since we've talked about both of them. And since we're not voting, we're going to be voting once the conference call is over. At least we've had this discussion, and those who can't make the conference call can listen to the audio tape. So, Howard, I'll let you proceed with the next measure.
Okay. So we are up to measure
12.
Which is the use of a pre-post-procedural timeout. And this measure, the summary, all were in agreement that it was important most are in agreement about scientific acceptability, most about usability. The feasibility ratings varied, and all except one recommended its inclusion, and the rationale for that, I'm clear because it was me, was that I thought the measure is looking at an important issue, but wanted more specificity. This was an all or nothing issue. If there were multiple components of this expanded timeout, and if you needed to, and I think this was part of our comments during the during the meeting, was if you needed to hit all four to get credit, or how that was going to be handled.
I think the way we, at least the way we do it here at the Cleveland Clinic, is that you need all four to get credit. So in other words, you have to discuss that the antibiotics were given, whether that patient had whether the steroids or whatever else needed to be done, either all or none. They had to include all of them. And you had to make the incision, in order for the timeout to be correct, you had to make the incision within 1 minute of doing the timeout.
Okay.
It was all or none.
Howard, let me respond to your question as a measure proposer, and perhaps you would suggest wording. I think you raise a very important question in do you have to do every phase of this every time. I think the spirit in which we tried to word the measure was that you acknowledged the process and acknowledged the steps of the process. In other words, it talks about one step being very abbreviated. If the patient is unstable at the end of bypass, you don't spend a long time debriefing. But to acknowledge the importance of each one of those steps is, I think, crucial to the process. I don't think that the need to abbreviate a step constitutes failure. Does that make some sense to you?
Yes. No, I understand. Yeah, that makes sense. I guess So, I mean, there clearly are times where, you know, you have things which, you know, are relevant, not relevant, and you can't do them for certain reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the – and I understand that. What about the documentation of this? Is this now within the STS data set?
In Epic. It's in Epic. I don't know that it's in the data set.
I can answer that. The STS database took the approach that everything we recommended in regards to outcome measures were for outcomes that we already tracked in the database, and that all structure and process measures would be added to the database once they were endorsed by NQF.
Okay.
The reason we did that was because we knew what outcomes we were going to track, and we were going to track those as we do now regardless. But the structure and process measures, we didn't want to add them now and then have to revise them after they were endorsed by NQF. So our strategy is exactly as the structure and process measures are endorsed by NQF, they will all be added to the STS database once that endorsement is done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's helpful.
So what should I do?
Are there any other comments about this measure?
Are we specifying where the timeout occurs in this?
The timeout, I think, has to occur when the patient is prepped and draped and you're ready to make the incision. I think it has to occur then.
Yeah, no, I'm not worried about the pre-procedural timeout. I'm worried about the post-procedural debriefing.
Yes, it says this debriefing should take place prior to the patient leaving the operating room or its equivalent and may be followed by a more in-depth dialogue involving team members at a later time. The actual debriefing in the operating room is intentionally and importantly brief in recognition of the fact that periods of transition may be times of instability or vulnerability.
Yeah, so we have the escape. I see
yes.
it now. I'm sorry. I read past that someplace. Sorry.
Any other comments? Okay. So let's go on to the next measure, which is measure 18. And this is stratified operative mortality. The summary of this was there were four evaluations. Hello? I'm sorry. Four evaluations submitted. All were in agreement that it was important. Most were in agreement about it, that it was high to moderate for scientific acceptability. Most were in agreement high to moderate for usability, and most agreement high moderate for feasibility, and all four who put a comment in here recommended the measure. So any discussion about that?
Like there are five. Or
there are five. That's right. You're right. And all five were yes. Sorry about that.
I knew I could contribute something.
Good job, Marshall.
Okay. So if there's no comments or for discussion, we'll go on to the next measure, the last measure that we have to talk about in this call, and that's measure 21. And it's a standardized mortality ratio for congenital heart surgery, risk adjustment for congenital heart surgery RACs adjusted. Again, five responses, it looks like. And all were in agreement that it was important. Four out of the five agreed that it was important. Excuse me, one second, I'm just changing my page so I can scroll across. The scientific acceptability was sort of mixed, but mostly high-moderate. Usability was high to moderate. Same with feasibility. There were two moderates, a high and a low. And there were three yeses for acceptance and two noes.
So I guess for the people that I think both Daryl and Gus are on the call.
Yeah, I'm on the call.
You gave, I think there were moderate to high remarks almost across the board.
Who did? I did?
No, I think that was, oh, Daryl, that was, I'm reading one line ahead. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry. Yep. You gave moderate, quite a bit, moderate and low. So I guess we're using two different scores for this one and the one before. Why no here?
Are you asking me why no here?
Yeah, why no here and yes before?
Well,
we're evaluating them both separately, I think is what the email said. Not worrying about one in lieu of the other.
Sure, okay. We're talking now about, just so I'll know, we're talking about the standardized mortality ratio, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the reason why I said no is because one, it's for the same reasons that John talked about, is that the reliability of the data are not as good as they are in the previous one. Now, it would seem like this SMR is here and not measured in the 18, the one previous, whereas the 18 can easily measure the SMR, all you have to do is just make a computation. This SMR is based on the data that John talked about, the administrative data. That's one, and I had a problem with that. And the next thing that I had a problem with is that it's not clear where the software is coming from to make this happen. For instance, we know that the software to develop or to measure the operative mortality in the STS, EACTS, we know where that's coming from. That's coming from the STS database, and almost everybody has that. So they don't have to get any new software. I'm not sure exactly where the adjustment has to be gotten, where that software has to be gotten for this this measurement. So I think for those two reasons, agree or disagree, those are the reasons why I did that. And I hope you understand that.
Hi, this is Ashley. I just wanted to clarify the, I don't think that the, it requires any software. It uses administrative data and manual data abstraction, but I think if there's someone from Children's Hospital Boston that can clarify that on the line.
Sure. I think that we provided the beta coefficients for the model from the KID 2006. So any center that had a listing of its cases as well as the additional variables at their own institution could calculate their performance. And that was what actually was done with several of the references that we provided. And as I said before, the methodology was being proposed in its ICD-9 administrative data application, as well as using other data sources such as chart abstraction and other registries such as the Pediatric Cardiac Care Consortium. And I would also like to remind the panel that the NQF has already endorsed a model using administrative data that was proposed by ARC in the past.
Kathy, this is John Meyer. Can I just ask one question about just looking forward a little bit? If this ICD-10 thing actually happens, what happens to, is this still going to be possible to do this?
That's a good question. It's actually required if a measure is endorsed that someone steward the measure. And we're developing the ICD-9 and the SNOMED application this summer.
Okay. And can I ask just one other question? Have we ever compared data sources to, you know, in the pediatric world? In other words, comparing the administration. As far as I know, we have not, but you...
I can't hear you, John. What's the question?
I said my recollection is that this has not been done, but I was just curious if you knew of something that I missed, which is certainly possible, whether or not there's been a comparison using the same patient population of different coding systems. And the reason I'm a little nervous about this, of course, is because of what happened in Massachusetts when the same time period compared to the adult cardiac databases and, you know, came up with pretty discrepant results comparing SCS adult cardiac data with the administrative data collected through all the hospital discharges. So do you know if any comparable has ever been done in our realm?
Well, what I know is the data that we provided in the submission, which was from Children's Hospital data from 2003, done the two different ways. And we didn't look at each individual case to look at coding variation because, as you are well aware, the amount of information content in various codes varies. What we did look at, though, and what is the core basis of our methodology is the discriminatory validity of the methodology using the various methods. And when used, the way that people code data in the real world that end up in administrative data, the amount of discriminative validity that we have with this measure is really very high and wasn't particularly different when the cases were essentially ascertained and put into categories using the various different extraction methodologies.
So the presumption being that if the number is big enough, whatever the vagaries are of an individual institution coding procedures or whatever, somehow wash out. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's one issue, as well as the fact that the administrative data in institutions, because of the billing issues, is actually subject to audit on a regular basis by the payers. So as an example here at Children's, I think that our medical records department undergoes 25 audits per month. to verify the accuracy of the administrative data. And that's true for most payers across the country. So I think that also helps keep, you know, to reduce the level of coding variation. The other thing that you know, since you helped us develop this, is that where there was ambiguity in the codes, one of the things that's very important is that the ambiguous codes that could represent the same procedure end up in the same category. And it's actually core to the methodology that that level of rigor be obtained or be retained really throughout the application. So I think that that helps as well. So even if there's miscoding of histology flow versus something like that, as long as they all end up in the same category, it doesn't interfere with the validity of the measure at all.
Does anybody feel that these two, the last two measures, can coexist in this slate?
I don't think it's a matter of whether they can coexist. I think they can. I think it's a matter of what we're going to be asking centers to do to achieve similar reports.
Is that Nancy? Is that you?
Yes, it is.
So how can they coexist, Nancy?
Well, you collect the data for both of them. I mean, they can coexist. It's a matter of whether they should coexist. The element of what the burden is on the centers and the clinicians is a big deal.
Yeah, but, you know, I think, to be honest with you, I think the clinician burden on the administrative claims data is zero, isn't it? I mean, unless the physicians are actively involved in reviewing the code. I mean, all these administrative claims databases are basically collecting what the hospitals submit for bills. That's their diagnosis and procedure coding by which the hospital gets paid.
The burden is taking that information and transforming it into a calculated indicator of quality.
Right.
Right, okay. But I don't think there's a data collection problem. Right? Or am I misinterpreting this?
Well, I don't know. Can the, is the administrative data, you know, there's so many databases out there.
That's actually the KID database is available through the federal government. On an every 3-year database. Most centers have, I think it's about 40 states now, are required by their states to submit this data to the state, and then they can get the data back from the state. And centers that participate in the FIS database also can get this data back from their FIS database. So there's multiple sources for an individual site to access their own administrative data.
I guess the only other question is the timeliness of the availability of the information, right? I mean, that's the only other difference, I think, between the two databases or the two data sets.
Right, but as I said before, a site that has, for example, access to their last quarter's data could also just use the beta coefficients that we provided and just do a calculation, which is what we do internally whenever any of the registries is essentially behind on giving us our summary reports, which most of them are, so that we can track our quarterly performance in real time.
Do they need to assign RACS classifications to each of their procedures?
Yes.
And so is that done then by hand?
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
That requires a clinician to do it. It's got to be clearly documented somewhere.
Somebody understands how to translate whatever the surgeon said the procedure was into the right category. We had a research assistant do it here who was a kid out of college with just someone, you know, to check her work.
I And right now in our surgical data in the STS database that we use, it's the surgeons that actually put the details of that into the database.
Right, and it's those codes that the surgeons use that the medical abstractors use in order to assign the ICD-9 codes.
Right. So they should be able to coexist. Which, again, begs the question as to whether they need to coexist.
Right.
So anything, it's possible, well, but is it necessary?
They could coexist. I agree with you, Nancy. The question is, if they do, then well, what are you going to do if you have two different numbers? And the reason I say that is because in one database, there are more operations, more procedures that are tracked than others. And so then what do you do with that? That's a hard one.
This is Ashley. At this point, I know you guys are thinking ahead, but we really just like you to evaluate the measures on its individual merits. So when you vote later on today, for those of you on the call, we really want you to, I know you guys are thinking about coexisting, and that's great, and maybe that will impact your vote, but it shouldn't. Your recommendations for endorsement should be based on the measure itself individually and not necessarily in the context of the other measures at this point.
Right.
Okay. Is there any further discussion on this measure? Since we're getting to the end of our allotted time. Oh, hello?
Nope.
Hello? Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
We're all here.
For some reason, I thought I lost
here.
You. Okay. So if I look at our agenda, then I think we've gone through all the measures. And the next item was for measure developer response and public comment.
I think the measure developers have both had adequate opportunity to respond at this point. I think we'll just open it up for public comment. I don't know if anyone from the public is on the line who would like to make a comment.
There is no one from the public on at this time.
Okay, thank you. So unless there's any other comments or questions, in terms of next steps, actually immediately after this call, we'll be sending out an email to everyone with a link to cast your votes for the measures. And for those who were not able to dial in, we'll be sending out to everyone a meeting summary of the comments of the call and the recording of the call so they can listen to that before they cast their vote. And we'll give everyone until early next week, a week from today, actually, to cast their votes. And then from there, we will be putting together a draft report, which will be sent out to everyone for their review. That will be posted online for public comment. And then we will go back to the committee at that point to respond to any outstanding comments that come in on the report, and then move forward with this with the member vote and then CSAC review at that point. So a few more steps to go yet. I appreciate everyone's perseverance in this process, and the next step for you guys is to vote on the measures.
Are we finished discussion? Is that what we have now?
Yes, unless there's any other questions or outstanding comments.
I just have one comment, and that is when you said that each measure has to be evaluated by itself. I can understand that. What do you do when the situation? When for me, and this is a sincere question, what do you do when you find one is A and the other one is B, or one is A and the other one is C? And I sincerely feel that the last two are mutually exclusive. You're either going to pick one or the other. And I think, for instance, if A did not exist, if the EACTS, STS EACTS score did not exist based on some 78,000 actual patients that have been codified, et cetera, then I think that B would be good. But that's not the way I see it. So, but you said, and your instructions were that we're going to evaluate one each at its own, on its own merit. And so I'm having a little hard time with that. And anyone else having a hard time with that?
Karen, if you'd like to help clarify
right.
that? This is just a process issue that you're right that generally NQF, if there's competing measures, would ask eventually to have a discussion about which measure should be recommended. There are reasons to have measures on the same topic, and one is different data sources, different settings, et cetera. So, but we don't even get to a competing measure unless both measures have been determined to meet the criteria. And you, so the question is, does each of the measures meet NQF's criteria? And then if we end up with both measures being determined to meet the criteria, then we have a competing measures issue. It's something that we like to get comment on, and it is something that will the steering committee will have to address, and we'll have to sort out the issues about that you started to discuss about measures that coexist or measures that are clearly competing and you know, have different methodologies that need to be sorted out. So that's the reason that Ashley said that. It's really our process that each measure should be evaluated individually, determined if they individually would meet the criteria in order and could be recommended. If they were individually taken a look at, and then after that, if we have a competing measures issue, then we have to deal with it.
What's the process for dealing with it? Well, number one, how do we define competing measures if, in fact, they are arising from different data? And then that gets a general question. What's the definition of competing measures?
Well, there's not a black and white definition for that. So, you know, it's just, you know, where we're at in this current state of measure development and evaluation. So I can't give you a black and white definition. A general definition is, you know, measuring the same topic in the same target population. But again, our criteria are not an absolute, and so there can be valid reasons for having, you know, similar measures on the same topic and same target population, and that's what we would want to have further discussions with the steering committee. So our process that Ashley laid out is that, you know, first we have to see what you all say in terms of your voting, and then, you know, we have a process of getting public comment, and then, you know, all those comments will come back to the steering committee to resolve, you know, whether one or both or neither end up getting recommended for NQF endorsement.
Just my recollection was is that we wanted to ferret out any competing measures, and that's what I did. I remember the last time our face-to-face meeting that we didn't want to have similar ones. We wanted to have either one or the other, and that's
right.
What I remember.
Right, and actually we have multiple competing measures, as was mentioned throughout the course. Some of these measures are competing with already endorsed measures. So that's also going to be an issue that we probably will have to bring back to the steering committee in terms of endorsing another measure where we already have an endorsed measure. So we have several layers of this, and the, you know, it gets complicated. We certainly are with you on that. But we need to, you know, start with evaluating each measure on its own merits. And, you know, if you were considering it alone, would it have been determined to meet our criteria to be recommended? And then if we have a competing measure issue, we go from there.
Thank you for clarifying that for me.
Okay. Does anyone else have any questions before we close? We're thank you, co-chairs, for keeping us on time. That was a lot of material to get through in a not so large chunk of time. So thank you, co-chairs.
Ashley?
Yes.
Hi, this is Jane Hahn from STS.
Hi.
Hi. Can I just ask a really quick question? When we're saying, or when you're saying that the steering committee recommended these measures, are we talking about time-limited endorsement or full endorsement, or are we not even there yet?
Well, no. The measures, the steering committee actually received a packet before they started evaluating the measures of what each measure was eligible for, and that was based on the data that was submitted, the information that
okay.
was submitted with the with their measure submissions, and the two measures that are eligible for full endorsement at this point are the outcome measures.
The mortality. Okay,
right.
Got it.
And then the other measures are all time limited at this point.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions before we close? Okay, look for the email in your inbox in about 5 to 10 minutes. And thank you, everyone, again for your time. Appreciate it.
When are we going to when should we vote? Now or tomorrow or when?
For those of you on the call, if you want to vote now while it's fresh in your mind, we certainly encourage you to do that. More so for the people who aren't on the call, we're giving them a little bit more time because they'll have to listen to the call and, you know, review everything in the absence of actually being on the call. So we're sending it to you now right after the call so you have the ability to do that right away. But we're giving a one-week time frame to accommodate the people who weren't able to attend.
Review again who was not able to attend, other than Daryl Gray, that one I remember. But who
yeah, Dr. Gray, Alan Hinkle, Dr. Hoyer, Lisa Nugent, and Patty Galvin.
Okay.
Right. So there's no rush to vote today, but if for the, you know, so some of you may want to review more materials, and that's perfectly fine. But for those that are ready, it will be available to you.
This is a straight yes/no on each variable, or I mean each measure.
Yes.
Yes. Everyone, set? Any other questions?
Thank
okay.
you so much.
I think that's it. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, have a good afternoon.
Thank you all for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.